taking fire from both ridge lines. We were taking fire from everywhere. We sent 100 guys, and they had like a battalion, so we were outnumbered.
It's not how you want to start a mission off.
It definitely felt wrong that we were so highly trained, so well equipped, and so cohesive as a unit to be in such a bad position. This shouldn't be happening.
I was scared, you know, like it was the worst thing I'd ever seen in my entire life.
I didn't kid myself. I didn't tell myself that I was gonna make it out of there.
I don't think anyone is immune to the effects of war. It doesn't matter, you know, what your upbringing is, how tough you are, how badass of a SEAL you are.
He said, I gotta get out of here, I'm gonna die. It was eye-to-eye contact. I lost it inside. Not physically, but I was just like, I don't know what to do.
I'm a warrior. I'm here to, you know, make sure that all my brothers come back alive.
When you decide that you want to survive, you have to make that choice beforehand, that whoever it is, if they have a weapon, they're going to die. I'm going to kill anybody I have to get back to my kids.
I think it's important that we tell these stories and that we remember that these men gave their lives for another man. That is a very special thing about who we are.
Welcome to the Global Recon Podcast. I'm your host, John Hendricks. We have a very special episode for this week's podcast. Co-hosting this episode with me is Chantel Taylor. She was on a podcast a couple episodes ago. And Chantel is a retired British Army combat medic. And she was in the service for over a decade with multiple rotations in different capacities to Afghanistan. And then went on to do a lot of security work post-military. So she spent a lot of time in several war zones across the world. And she has a very interesting story. In fact, Chantel is renowned as the first British female army veteran in the history of the UK to kill an enemy combatant in close quarters. And, you know, that's not something she boasts about or brags about, but I think it's something that's kind of significant and worth mentioning. So on for this episode are two of the producers from a show that is premiering on Veterans Day on the History Channel called The Warfighters. So essentially what this is a collection of stories told by veterans on camera with reenactments. And from what I understand, a lot of the actors in these reenactments are veterans themselves. So it's pretty awesome. There will be 4 episodes coming out initially. I believe they're each around an hour. And then in a couple of months, they may release some new episodes as well. It looks very good. It's going to be exciting. There'll probably be some faces that you guys are familiar with, and I'm sure there will be faces that you are not familiar with, but all of these stories are really intense and kind of harrowing stories of combat that these men went through. So before we get into that, in Iraq, the big offensive to retake Mosul has been underway, and from initial reports, it's looking like, you know, Iraqi forces led by the ISOF, which is the Iraqi Special Operations Forces, mixed in with American advisors, are rapidly taking back territory from ISIS, and it seems that they have them on the run and they're really kicking ass over there. So obviously we support them. We support the Peshmerga. We support the Iraqi troops. And we support the Americans over there fighting. They're fighting a good fight, and we hope everything works out. So with that being said, now, here is the conversation that I had with Chantel Taylor and the producers of the Warfighters.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
we have a very special episode for this week's podcast. Co-hosting for this episode is Chantel Taylor. Chantel is a British Army combat medic with deployments to several places around the world that would include Afghanistan. Chantel was on the show prior, and I'll pass it over to Chantel. She'll give a brief introduction on herself, and then we'll talk with our guest.
Yeah, hi. It's great to be co-hosting this show. It's a very important show. I'm a former British Army combat medic. I served in support of 16 Air Assault Brigade on combat operations to Helmand Province in Afghanistan and also in southern Iraq.
Okay, so our two guests for today's episode, one is Mike Baumgarten, and Mike is a veteran.
Got it.
Yeah. And Mike is a veteran of the 75th Ranger Regiment. And our other guest is Ray Mendoza. And Ray is a former U.S. Navy SEAL. Guys, how's it going?
Doing great.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks for having us.
Yep.
All right, so.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, so there is a, so you guys are involved with a show that's coming out on the History Channel on Veterans Day. And it is called The Warfighters. So can you guys give the audience some brief details on the show? And then we'll talk backgrounds a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Even though this is Ray's baby, the whole show is, you know, originally his concept. So last year, this show existed as Live to Tell. Which we shot and then it aired in January. We got four episodes in and you know, History wanted to make a few more and rebrand it as The Warfighters. So there is some confusion with those things. That's all the same show. But this show is first person accounts, focusing, you know, at least this season on Special Operations Forces. It's unnarrated. So everything you hear is straight from the source, from the guys who were there. And a lot of these stories are, while some are, you know, have some notoriety or are, you know, have been made into movies already. A lot of these stories are just guys we know from the community. And it's those, you know, platoon engagements where, you know, the media doesn't know about it, but guys have done some really heroic, amazing things. It's just part of the, you know, showing the nightly grind, the daily grind of what it's like overseas. And you know, that's the show. And the recreations, we hire, you know, all as much as we can veterans. A lot of them are special operations veterans to do these reenactments, these recreations, and we try to keep everything as accurate as possible.
Okay, so and this show is going to be airing on the History Channel on Veterans Day, right?
Yes, sir. November 11th, Veterans Day. It'll be a 4-hour special, actually hosted by a friend of ours, Bert Kuntz, who's an ex Green Beret and owns a company called Peacemaker Trading. An apparel company, really good dude, who is also, he's also tied to another show that Ray and I did, that'll also air on the History Channel on December 15th called, the Selection Special Operations Experiment. I think I got that title right.
Okay. Yeah. And, and that show would involve like guys from different branches, and civilians, right? Something like that.
We basically developed a 12-day course based off the selections from multiple special operations units. So, you know, SFAS, which is Green Beret Selection, you know, you had RIP, or currently known as RASP for Ranger Regiment, to include some elements of Ranger School. You had stuff from BUDS, SQT, added to the mix. And all the instructors are from across special operations. We put 30 people, 30 civilians, no military experience through this 12-day selection course. And when the show airs, you'll see who made it, why they made it, you know, et cetera. But the key thing to this, and even in Warfighters, is, you know, Ray's a SEAL, I'm a Ranger, you know, given the laws of nature, we shouldn't even be friends or get along according to pop culture. But we do, you know, I've known Rain for years on Active Duty. And that's what these shows highlight. It's teamwork. It's all these guys from different units working together, as opposed to a lot of things, a lot of shows where they're pitted against each other. So it's just something we're trying to attack in a way.
All right, cool, man. So Ray, can we talk a little bit about, you know, what motivated you to join the Navy? And then if we can talk about your career, throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always known that I wanted to serve. I think it was just a matter of where and with who. Growing up, obviously, I joined in 97, and I'm 37. So the SEAL teams wasn't really as popular, or it wasn't a lot of information that there is now. So did my research, you know, kind of just being who I am, I think, just a very kind of, what's the word to use? Competitive. I kind of just sought that out. Didn't know much about it. I think in boot camp, like, they do a little video and, you know, a SEAL comes around and shows this like old school video of what the SEAL teams are. And it just caught my eye. And yeah, so I just tried out, and, you know, obviously it was definitely, met a lot of like-minded people, and I just felt that was the place for me to be.
Yeah, for sure. Ray, you joined at an interesting time, because I joined the year after you. And since that time, we've kind of been everywhere, haven't we? We've been in every sort of conflict from there. It's been a busy time. So it was maybe an interesting time to join.
Yeah, you know, for me growing up, I mean, I kind of went through your standard Hispanic pipeline in Los Angeles. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, so I needed to get out of there.
Yeah.
It would have been bad, but... Again, it was just I knew I had to serve and kind of give myself an opportunity to succeed, and so
it's yeah, just, that's almost very similar to my story, and it's kind of, I say the military saved me, but I don't know what it turned me into, but it's not a bad thing.
No, I know, of course, yeah, I wouldn't change anything. I think it was the best decision of my life.
I was going to ask actually that last year I covered the our version of that, the SAS Who Dares Win selection process, and it was done for TV. And seriously, the amount of work that goes in and the amount of work you must have put in, it takes a big set to be able to do that properly. And when people actually watch it, those blokes get beasted, and they got, you know, seeing the states that some of them got in, it was like, wow, this is, you know, it was kind of, they never made the exact standards because that would be unrealistic. But they were absolutely thrashed, and it was, I mean, I'd say it was fun, obviously, because I wasn't doing it. I just covered them medically.
Yeah, that we actually worked hand in hand with that production company.
Oh, wow. Yeah, cool. Yeah,
they reached out to us, or not us, Film 45, to kind of do a U.S. adaptation of that.
Foxy and them, yeah. Oh, cool.
Yep.
Yeah, nice. It was, yeah, well, I look forward to it.
Yeah, it should be pretty interesting. having witnessed it first thing, you know, these people had no idea what they were getting into.
And the funny thing is watching the attitude sort of bleed out of them, you know, because even like even if you've gone through like military, you know, arduous courses, you put normal guys into that sort of environment and they think, oh yeah, I'm cool, I'm a bodybuilder, and it's like, that's not going to help you here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of them, you know, the resume was like, you know, I go to the gym.
Yeah, I'm a ninja.
That's great and all, but that has very little to do with what you're about to
do. Back to obviously what we're talking about, the war fighters. I was really intrigued as to, because a lot of things that people see on the news, you know, we know as like soldiers or operators that is tough, but you still managed to keep that humor. Have you managed to kind of get that into that, so people see that we do laugh at the most stupid things, and it's, you know, and it's a brilliant sense of humor in the military.
Yeah, there are some moments where I think naturally, organically, the humor will surface. Yeah. Fortunately, a lot of these stories, you know, either you know, one of their comrades has fallen, so it's, you know, we have so much interview footage. I mean, hours and hours, and we have to squeeze it into 42 minutes, and so it's challenging to when you're laying out the story and working with our story editors, which are huge with this and helping us put this together. But you have to figure out, like, all right, where can we fit this in? Does it make sense story-wise? You know, because ultimately we want to honor the guys, and we want to honor, you know, in certain cases, the guys who've passed and
died. Yeah, sure.
So, but it does. It comes out sometimes. But again, like I said, it's hard to squeeze it in when you have so much material.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's almost it comes naturally, because generally, you know, what I always find that when guys are remembering that are fallen, that it's usually at the end of that. We go through the sort of motion of, you know, you're sad, you're respectful, and there are tears. And then the one thing that gets you out of that is a funny story about the guy who fell, you know. And it's kind of, it's quite hard to explain that to people, because it's not, it's just the way people are, isn't it?
Yeah, there's just not enough words. It's one of those you have to be there type scenario.
Like, you have to be in the toilet scenario to understand that.
Exactly.
So
it's the brotherhood of shared suffering.
So Ray, did you go straight into Buds, or did you serve in some other capacity before you went to selection?
Yeah, I went. This is kind of a sore topic for me, but I actually went straight into Buds. I made it all the way to the third phase, where I got dropped for a weapons practical in third phase. It's kind of where we got to take apart, three weapons. Anyways, I didn't make the time. I got dropped. I went to the fleet to Okinawa, Japan for about 3 years. And once the fleet gets their claws into you, they don't want to let you go. So it took a while for me to get back. I came back in 2002, graduated, and then joined up with Team 5 at that point. So yeah, I did some fleet time, kind of. So it's kind of a long road for me to get there.
No one likes a quitter, Ray, do they?
No, they don't. I mean, I did my time in the Navy, and I did it honorably. I didn't whine or complain. I did my time, and it wasn't for me. I gave it my best effort, and it was just what I experienced going through Buds the first time with, the competitiveness, the like-minded people that I was around. I just didn't find that in the regular Navy. Not that they're not, good sailors or they have quality people there. It was just, I felt I was a little out of place. And I just felt I wasn't going to get what I wanted out of service. But
So now these days, people, they didn't always have that, did they, where you can just go straight into the Navy and then go straight into Buds? Like, I think was that more of a recent kind of program, or?
No, it's always been that way. I mean, it's not as competitive as it is now with Active Valor and all these movies coming out. And I think going into the SEAL teams is very attractive. So it's kind of a long line to get in. Where when I went in, it was, there's just kind of a standards test that you have to pass. As long as you met your ASVAB scores were good and your PRT scores were good, you could apply. And then you would just go straight to Buds. So for the most part, it was kind of easy. I mean, not easy, but it was a fairly, easy process, I guess. It's just.
Yeah, because I suppose if you're driven, obviously you work, you went back that second time. It takes a certain type.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you show up, there's 150 guys, and, obviously everybody says they want to be a SEAL or a Ranger or whatever pipeline they're going through. But when the rubber meets the road, it narrows down really, really quick. And you see who really wants to be there, which.
I was just it was selection and not opt yourself in.
Yep.
Hey, so Mike, you served in Ranger Battalion. Can you talk about your story a little bit, like what motivated you to join the Army and a little bit of your career?
Yeah, sure. Prepare to be bored. I grew up in suburban safety in Southern California and in a pretty well-to-do, upper middle-class neighborhood. So, life wasn't honestly too rough. I grew up with a big sense of history. I was obsessed with World War II as a kid. And that's because my father's side of the family, my grandfather was a Holocaust survivor. So that was a big part of growing up, was sitting around and hearing these stories. And my dad wasn't even, was born in Panama because they hadn't immigrated to the States yet, on their way out of Europe. And so I was the first generation Baumgarten born in America. And with all that added up, I knew that's what I was going to do from a young age. You know, I remember like sixth or seventh grade, I was pretty much had my heart and mindset on joining the military. So as soon as I could, I joined the delayed entry program, in 2001, prior to September 11th. And then I graduated high school in July that year and shipped off to basic training, with the Ranger contract. And so what that means is you go to basic training and infantry school, then airborne school, and then you had your shot at, trying out for RIP. And so that's what I did. Ended up going to, you know, 1st Ranger Battalion, 2002, and, did a 4-year enlistment there. Ended up getting out for about 11 months, didn't fit in too well. In civilian life, and went right back crying to mommy. The 1st Ranger Battalion took me back, and I did another 6 years, there, 10 deployments total. And, you know, in my last 2.5 years, I got stationed in San Diego on a billet where, so Naval Special Warfare in their training command has a training cell, and that training cell is a land warfare cell. So I got stationed there as an instructor, where I worked with Ray here, and that's where we met, in 2010, during my instructor time working with, Naval Special Warfare, teaching that course for my last, 2.5 years in the Army.
Yeah, that's,
and then,
no, yeah. I was going to say, that's interesting. I don't think too many people are aware of that, but I've heard of Rangers being involved in the, Naval Special Warfare, training cadre before.
Yeah, there's a couple before me. There's even, you know, there's a couple ex-Ranger civilian contractors over on the SQT side, where my side was training, the actual teams. And it was a great job. You know, it really opened my eyes to how other units, especially the SEALs, who, you know, we were all fond of making jokes about how they worked. And, you know, you realize that the person it's basically the same person. One kid that becomes a SEAL, becomes a Ranger, becomes a Green Beret. It's all the same kid. You know, we all just, it's, you know, it's what do you buy into? What culture do you want to be a part of? And that's really the only, the difference, and the differences are minor. But you know, I really did enjoy that job. Yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, as competitive as we are, we're probably always going to talk shit about each other, but
yeah.
We're all working towards the same goal. You know, I feel like a lot of that, I don't know that when guys get out, they want to make those same jokes, and they'll realize that, you know, we're just civilians now. And it's like, you can probably move on with that shit, but,
but you never do.
No, you never do. And, you know, the joke's still about. I mean, both my roommates are SEALs, which is kind of weird, but
yeah, but that gets weird.
Yeah.
We win every time.
So we're a nice dysfunctional family. But yeah, that was my time in service. I did 10 deployments, got out and went to I was going to college for archaeology. For a couple of years, and that's until Ray and my other roommate Mark, you know, tempted me with the offer of working in Hollywood, a place I never ever wanted to be, in a city I never wanted to live in, and here I am doing both.
Yeah, it wasn't that boring, Mike, when you said about be prepared to be bored. I think you got it.
It's not that exciting. There's people who are still.
So, Ray, how long were you in the Navy total?
16 years and some change. Ah. Yep. I bounced early.
Did you ever, did any of you two go into, you know, when I got out of the military, I went straight back to Afghan in the private sector because it was almost like, right, what do I do now? And then and I ended up in the, like I did then a further, I think, 7 years in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Did you guys go into the private sector or straight into something different?
I kind of hopped right into this. I mean, with on the coattails of Act of Valor, I kind of had these opportunities come across my way, which I was still trying to build while I was active. But
yeah,
when I got out, I chose not to do that. One of the reasons why I got out was I have a daughter who's 10 years old, which I really didn't get to see much. While I was in the SEAL teams. So I kind of made a decision not to get back into that. I kind of wanted to be a part of her life as much as possible. And I felt that the job opportunities that were given would allow me to, you know, start a new career and have a life with my daughter. So I chose not to go that route. But I had a lot of opportunities to do that. But
Yeah, because it seems to be like that seems to be the next step for a lot of people. But, you know, for the stuff that you're doing now, obviously, let's hope that that sort of continues, because this sort of work, the work that you're putting out there is really good. You know, it's really good for veterans.
Yeah, the show itself, you know, we've got, again, like Ray touched on it in our prior conversation here. The emails we get back from the guys who participate in the show and their families are overwhelmingly positive and have helped guys, you know, transition a little bit better over to civilian life. I've had, you know, guys that I served with or knew, you know, message me or send me emails that weren't even involved with the show, but they cite the show as an example of like, hey, you know, I don't know how to effectively explain this, to articulate this to my loved ones, to my family, right? They have no idea what I'm talking about, and nor do I feel that I have the ability. So what I can do is watch this show with them, and they're at least going to understand a bit more than they did without seeing it. And to me, you know, that's really what it's a huge part of the gratification I get from doing this, is those messages, is helping guys, you know, explain and get a little bit of closure or whatever they get from it. But that's the objective. You know, it is entertainment, but it's entertainment with the more human purpose.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the times I've seen this on other where soldiers are on documentaries, and it's almost like you see, even though there's a camera there, they forget that that's there, and then they actually start talking. In some ways, in some instances, it's the first time they've actually spoken properly about those incidences, and it can be quite shocking for some people, because you see what you perceive as these real sort of warrior men, and you know they are human inside. You know, we all bleed the same. So to get that sort of understanding across on TV is very powerful and very important.
Yeah, we are fighting the notion of the, you know, the unfeeling, cold, you know, Terminator style special operator, which is silly. That guy doesn't exist. Right? Maybe there are examples of that where guys just really, they're unaffected by everything, and that's great. But a lot of us aren't. And you still, you know, I don't think guys that aren't emotional do the job, don't go into spouse role. If you don't feel anything, it's rare that you go into a job where you have to be as passionate about it as special operations. So
yeah,
that itself, an example of someone that you have a lot of heart. Obviously you go into to serve selflessly and do something that's incredibly difficult. And while you do have to compartmentalize a lot of those emotions, thoughts and feelings, because you have a job to do in the moment, you know, how do you unpack that stuff afterwards? Well, this show shows that. And yes, many of the guys that we interviewed, that was the first time they talked about this particular instance, and that came out on camera. You know, I sat in front of the camera and got interviewed for an episode that involved, you know, my roommate got killed on a mission, and several of my friends got wounded. And this was my buddy that I asked to go on the show. This was his first time talking about it, and it all came out. And
yeah,
that itself, it was a pretty, you know, he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to come on knowing that it was his first time, but he did anyway because of how important it was. And so that camera, it does something about sitting in front of that. You start talking and you just go and all the memories come up, and it all just comes out. Whatever is in there, it just comes out. You know, it's weird that these guys, and this is about trust and about our, you know, Ray and I's reputation in respective communities, that these guys are willing to trust us to do this. But all this stuff comes out. You know, they won't talk to a shrink, but they'll talk to us and they'll talk to this camera when we ask them. And you have to hold that in the utmost respect and carry it very carefully, because it is kind of a fragile thing.
Yeah, and I think that makes this even more special, because if it wasn't you guys, and if it was just people trying to get too much out of somebody, there is that trust thing, and they know you're not, you know, they're not, this isn't just being put out there. Obviously you need to have people watch it, but it's still, the stuff that's being said is delicate, you know, and it is it's important. It's extremely important.
Yeah. I mean, these are the living memories of guys, and it is important to capture that now, I think, when we're young. Where sure. You look at shows like Band of Brothers, which those interviews are one of the best parts of that series, not just the scripted stuff. But we had to wait all this time, and I'm sure there were interviews before this, so I am speaking in generalities. But to me, that was one of my first experiences, aside from reading, is to watch these guys on camera that had been there. And there is a difficulty, I think, in a connection, right? When you see the old man speaking about, even though the guy was, you know, they were 18, 19, 20 when they did that. For us, I think now it's important to capture and document these stories, given a contemporary setting and guys when they're still young, to connect with our peers and with the current generation or younger generation, so they don't just see or think that war is this thing that's talked about when you're 70 or 80. You know, I think we do need to talk about it now, and we do need to connect with civilian counterparts so they understand who we are and our reasons for doing these things.
Yeah, for sure. And also, it's almost like we're in that generation that it doesn't look like it's going to be stopping anytime soon. You know, so it's almost, it's okay to feel crap sometimes. It's, you know, we don't need to label everyone with everything. It's just, I think that's just normal. It's normal to feel like that.
Sure. You know, you go through something like that, and it's only normal and natural to have emotional, psychological, and physical repercussions from that. You're not a broken thing.
No.
But there is an equal and opposite reaction for those actions. And it's hard to, there's no basic training for getting out of the military, right? You spend all this time physically and psychologically prepped for this job, which obviously sometimes takes years. But when you get out, you're in one day and you wake up the next morning and you're out, you know, very, very little prep. You know, that I feel like when I got out, the my own ego prevented me from probably even getting the help that was out there or even seeing it. And that's a lot of guys. But it's pretty flimsy when you get out and you face the realities, even just the cultural shock of realizing that you're out and nobody really cares, minus your immediate family, that the world really doesn't care about what you did. When you think when that job, you're the most important thing in the world, and you're serving this greater good.
And that's how it feels, which I think is even the disconnect some people feel from their families, like Ray saying he's gone, you know, he went back, he wanted to give his daughter time, even reconnecting with that, you know, is having that chance to do that. And I mean, that obviously changes everything for people, because some people can't, you know, they struggle to get back into sort of normal society.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, it's important that you guys are doing what you're doing for several reasons. But one is, you know, after World War One and Two, right? You know, it was a different time. It was a different generation. Society was a little different, and guys really didn't talk about their experiences. You know, like if you know whatever happened overseas, and when you came home, you were, you know, you did what you did, your job or whatever. Similar situation for Vietnam veterans. You know. It's like I've spoken to some Vietnam veterans, and One guy told me he had a brother-in-law who also served in an infantry unit in Vietnam, and they both got out around the same time. And he told me they never had one conversation about Vietnam. Like, it was just something they didn't talk about, you know? And then obviously with the advances in technology and the development of the internet with social media and, you know, being so connected, like we were never connected before in history. I think it's important that people can see like the realities of war, you know, like you said, everything is like, you know, people look at it and go, oh, you know, it's sexy. It's, you know, you're a SEAL, you're jumping out of airplanes and doing all this cool stuff. But, you know, there's a harsh reality to what war is, you know, and that's why I think it's important that people can watch a show like The War Fighters and see directly from guys who've been in these situations and served in these units and see what it's really like, you know, and to kind of give a proper perspective, versus having some super duper, you know, Hollywood type of thing that's not realistic in any way. And that would be the standard for what people think of, you know?
Yeah. You know, context is everything. So you got to look at where people get their information from or their idea, their notion of the war of the last, you know, 15 years. And it's, you know, it's going to come from the media or it could come from the guys that were there. And I think that's an important part of really taking back the narrative for the conflict and at least introducing more context for it. It is this show, and the fact that it's kind of establishing, its own standard, for telling those stories. I think that's incredibly important.
And how was, cause obviously we're talking about, you know, tier one special forces guys, how have the community been about it? Cause you're essentially, and it's a good thing because you're taking the kind of mask off of some of those guys that, you know, people see in pictures or different things. Have they been really receptive for the show or?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't got, like I said before, we haven't really received a lot of, attention to the show. It's just been kind of when we laid it out, we were, you know, rushed for time to get these things edited, and we didn't have a proper kind of media layout. But I have yet to receive any really negative comment. I think most of the guys are pretty receptive. I mean, one of our approaches to, you know, when asking these guys to do this is like, hey, this is not an opportunity or a platform for you to you know, pound on your chest and say how badass you are. It's very much to honor the guys you served with. And I think it's easier for me to praise my brother or my comrade that I served with than it is to talk about myself. I could talk about my friends all day.
Yeah.
And so that's what we asked them to do is, hey, like, tell me about, you know, Rob Sanchez or Rob Guzzo, some of these guys who have passed, and they can go on for days. And I think when we approached it that way, it's hard for somebody to say, hey, that's a bad thing. You shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be honoring the guys who died serving.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You're doing it in a way that's, you know, because we've seen the big films that are based on true stories, and some of them have been fantastic. But this, you're actually talking about guys that are there. So it's all the more poignant. It's even, you're almost even going further into that. Do you know what I mean? You're kind of, to actually physically see these guys that have either been there or have lost team members, that you just, it's like taking it a stage further, you know, because you're seeing or you're hearing what they have to say, which is, it's again, extremely important.
Yeah. And when you watch the show, you'll see it, typically each episode will have, you know, it's narrated by three, at a minimum, three guys that were there, and they all talk about each other. And so at the end, you know, we get to know everybody because the other, you know, their brother is talking about them and so on and so forth. And so it's, I think we get a better product and, you know, they're more open to talking. Once you pull on that thread, it just kind of unravels and
you can't shut people up.
It's an amazing process to watch. And you know, we'll be sitting in a separate room and all the other guys are watching, you know, their comrade talk, and you know, it's good to sit next to them and laugh, and you know, they tell a funny story about this person or
Yeah.
You know, so they, you know, we all make fun of each other as he's talking on camera, but it's good.
Is it going to be, it's definitely going to have some peeling onions or chopping onions moments in, isn't it? I can feel it already.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few episodes, no matter how many times I watch them,
I
have to go to the restroom so nobody sees me cry, but, some tearjerkers.
And we, even with the new episodes we shot, so that we worked on filming 4 new episodes this year. We shot 8 last year. 4 of those aired in January. So there's 4 unseen episodes plus the 4 new ones we did. But in the 4 new ones, we are tackling some pretty sensitive subjects. Yeah. Ray had mentioned Rob Guzzo. And this is a story, you know, we're about veteran suicide, but it's about, you know, special operations veteran suicide. And we hope that we're approaching this issue, you know, head on. And it's something that I think not a lot of people like to talk about it. Suicide's always a touchy subject. And I think while people are aware and doing things on social media to raise that awareness, this step in filming it, in talking to this young man's friends, his comrades, and not just that, but his family, his parents, showing painting the big picture, the entire picture of how this affects people and the factors that go into it from the guys that sat there and watched, who witnessed it, is an important task. You know, this isn't, war isn't just about the gunfights, you know, it's about the second and third order effects. So on these episodes where lives are lost, you know, we talk to the widows, we talk to the parents, in order to show the entire, the price of doing business. So,
yeah, because I mean, regardless of what anyone sort of says, there is a ripple effect, and you know, that ripple effect goes on to quite a few people. And I always think that, especially when it comes to veteran suicide, it is important to speak about it. And you know, regardless of what someone's doing to raise awareness, I think that can be no bad thing. You know, and it's a really sort of, it's a difficult subject, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, of course, you know, especially when it's your...
Exactly,
your friend took their own life, or, you know, and a lot of this, again, a lot of the material comes, it's from Ray and I and from the guys we knew and that we asked to step up and do these things that they normally wouldn't want to do, you know, if some strange director or producer came up to him and asked him, I highly doubt they would say yes. So we, you know, if we don't do this correct, if we don't do this the right way, then you know, it's not about careers or anything for us. I don't really give a shit. It's about doing right by these guys, because they have placed the utmost trust and faith in us to tell their story correctly.
Yeah,
and you know, one thing that's kind of interesting about the whole, you know, veteran suicide and dealing with post-traumatic stress is, this isn't something that's new. You know what I mean? This existed. There's evidence of this existing throughout almost every conflict in the history of the world. You know,
and sure.
You know, I think in World War II they called it shell shock. In Vietnam they had a different name for it, but it seems that, you know, there was, like, during World War II, there was like a famous quote from General Patton, who he was like telling some soldier who, you know, who was going through his issues, like, to just suck it up, you know. And you know, the truth is that's really the wrong way to approach it. And I think now with this age of connectivity, with so many guys coming home from such a prolonged period of war fighting, I think the reality of it is going to seep into everyday life for normal people, for people who haven't served, the people who have no connection to the military. And, you know, you know, guys who served for 10, 15 years in the military, having a big social media presence, and then you can get glimpses of what's on their mind, you know. And then
like with the show you guys are doing, you're gonna see and hear some of these stories, and then so as a society, we ask the question of ourselves, you know, how can we approach this, right? And what's the proper way to do it? And I had a former 18 Delta Special Forces medic on the podcast a couple episodes ago, and he had really bad TBIs and PTSD that resulted from his brain injuries. And one thing that he was talking about was, you know, guys would get out and he did the same thing. And, you know, they told him he had PTSD, and he was like, oh, you know, no, I don't. And he got angry. And, you know, what he said was, if you can't identify your target or your objective, you know, how can you fix it? You know, if you don't know where your target is, how are you going to get there? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's something that we are closer to figuring out now than we ever were before, because it was something that was just, you know, written off, like, you know, deal with it when you get home, that kind of thing. And then, you know, with all the controversy with the Veterans Affairs and things like that. So I think now, you know, with the culmination of everything that's happened, I think now we're probably closer than ever before to kind of cracking that nut, you know?
Yeah, you know, you're looking at a time where it is, there are more resources devoted to it. The understanding has been expanded. And, you know, in times past, it was people looked at it as just an emotional state. And I think, you know, in the Civil War, they called it lonely heart syndrome. It's gone by many names. It's the same thing. But understanding that it's not just a feeling, that it is a physical change to that person's brain, to their brain chemistry. And it's not just, you know, waking up and feeling like you're in a bad mood. Well, you've got to understand that there's a chemical and hormonal reason for those things. And obviously, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a PhD. This is just based on limited things that I'm finally able to read. So, you know, I may well be wrong, but it does need to be looked at. It does need to be studied more, because it just goes in to, when you go to war, you need to understand the effects, right? We often engage in conflict and think about the repercussions later. But if there was a greater understanding of the price, I feel like there'd be a little more deliberation and thought into putting America's sons and daughters in or any country, you know, in harm's way, without realizing that you need to have the infrastructure to take care of them when they get back. You know, I think it's a small thing to ask.
Yeah, for sure. Do you know, I remember my first deployment to Afghanistan. For me, it was completely non-kinetic, that one, because I worked in a hospital, and it was probably far worse. You know, the following tour, you know, I got into all sorts of shit, but mm-hmm. that tour was so, like, emotionally draining. And I remember an incident. We'd lost two special forces guys were killed quite early on, and mm-hmm. their team came in, and I was sort of standing around quite nervously, because I thought, well, what am I going to say to these guys? You know, I was a senior NCO, and I was dealt with, my job then was to deal with guys coming in or COs coming in to identify guys that were killed. And I just sort of stood there looking at these guys that I would, you know, they were from all of our obviously tier one units, and they were, I knew that they were inside, kind of, they were broken as they should be at that stage. But I also knew they had to go back out, you know, and I was like, well, you know, who's taking care of these guys? As in that they would just, because they had obviously missions to do, their tour wasn't finished. And so they would still do that same stuff, having to carry that. And I think that goes, I'm looking forward to seeing you know, what your guys are saying, because I imagine that's exactly the same feeling as what they had to do. So you lose team members, but you've still got to carry on, and you're strong enough to carry on. That's not the problem. It's when you actually get back and start reflecting on it. I think that's when the problems really occur for people. And it's, you know, and I'm glad that guys are getting more help, or that they're able to talk more about it, because it was always sort of a subject where you were taught, even for as young men, you know, keep your sort of problems to yourself. You know, that was just society, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's actually funny you mentioned that. It's a common thread to a lot of these episodes. You know, we ask you know, we do ask, like, okay, what happened on the mission? But even more so, so, you know, the audience, the viewers can get, bridge that gap, you know, as Mike mentioned, there is a human side to a lot of this stuff. And we would ask a lot of the hard questions, and as simple as, what were you feeling? And I can only speak from experience. When someone asks me how I'm feeling, I have, and still do to this day, a hard time describing that feeling unless you were there. And when you ask them, you know, they always say, well, that's not the time to process it. You know, there's a job to be done. We process that stuff later. And of course, we naturally get into that question. Well, how did you process it later and after? And they go into that. And you see, you know, depending on the person and what they've experienced and how they were brought up, you know, there's different responses, which to me are one of the most interesting parts of the show, because we all do process it differently. And you will see that in pretty much every episode, and they're all different responses, which is great, because we're all different people and we all process things differently and in our own ways.
And again, and that point there about people processing it differently, maybe from different backgrounds, that's actually, again, that could be, for instance, used as a different type of tool when people are recruiting. You know, there's so many things that could come from this show that will help people, help veterans, help, you know, I really look forward to seeing it and seeing how that sort of pans out. That the ripple effect of the show, if you like. I like to see how that works. And I'm quite glad that it's not getting what you say is loads of attention now, because that almost makes it all the more special.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
People will get a shock. They'll be like, what the fuck's this? And then it'll go crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the show's great. There's peaks and valleys. You know, you have the interviews are, you know, the most impacting to me. And then we have the recreations, which is that's kind of this the bang bang portion, the entertainment portion of it. And so I feel across the board we've captured it pretty well.
Yeah, and awesome.
The first four episodes, well, at least for when the show existed as Live to Tell, they're still on iTunes. So anybody could watch those right now if they wanted to, in preparation, or if they've never heard of the show and they're interested now, you know, you can go to iTunes and watch those four episodes.
I think History has posted those. I think you can watch all four
so they might be free.
On the History Channel.
I might get them on the plane. The History Channel on the plane?
Like I said, worst case iTunes, best case for free on the History Channel website.
Yeah, I'll download them for the flight tomorrow.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, so so you got four episodes coming out in November, and then the other four are going to come out. Do you have a date for those?
We do not. I think it's projected January, February timeframe. We don't have a set date on that yet.
But it'll be all 12 episodes will air. I don't know what format, if it's going to be a weekly thing. I assume it will be, but the whole thing will air as a series. entire series in that next year.
Wow. So if it's a success, I've got a question. Will you come over and help us do one in the UK?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's something we've talked about. I mean, it's
cool.
We're not the only ones fighting the war over here. So there's thousands of stories, not just soft, but conventional. I worked along, you know, some great conventional units, and they saved, you know, my ass many nights. So, you know, the reason we targeted soft is just because, you know, I have a lot of friends there. And,
yeah,
you know,
sure. Yeah, I've been on that outer cord and many a time. Thanks for that.
Appreciate it. Absolutely. You know, we would love to, you know, help facilitate that in any way, whether, you know, we're part of it or not, you know, doesn't really matter. But
yeah, I mean, as long as, you know, we want the show to do well, just because it means we get to tell more stories, right? If history renews it, then that's 12 more stories of people, 12 more stories that have never been heard that we're allowed to tell. I know Ray and I would both love to continue doing this until, you know, as long as we can, telling as many stories as we can, not just from soft, but conventional force. I don't care. You know, I'll tell doesn't matter.
And that's the good thing. I mean, even we've mentioned World War II, obviously, and since that time, you've had this alliance of the five countries, you know, Five Eye, which is what we have, the UK, US, New Zealand, Canada, and Australia. So I think, you know, among the all of us, and even in the soft community, you know, we seem to go everywhere together. So it's, you've got plenty of people there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, so where can people go? Like, if they want to just look at, like, some write-ups, like, is there, like, a page on the History Channel's website? Or, like, what's the best place for people to kind of just check out some information for the show?
Yeah, well, they can start with history.com. I think they have four episodes posted there, the first four that aired. We have a Warfighters Instagram page now. It's called the Warfighters on Instagram, where we'll show some behind the scenes pictures and clips and just some kind of snapshots to kind of get an idea what the show is about. They can follow it there as well.
Okay. We'll be sharing, obviously, on Instagram pages, Global Recon and Mission Critical. We want to share and get this out there because it's extremely important, and hopefully it's going to be have longevity. You know, we'll see this for years to come.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you guys for your support.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate your time.
Hey, no problem. Hey, guys, so do you guys have any points of contact or social media if anyone's interested, any of the audience is interested in catching up with you guys?
No. My Instagram is bomb, B-O-M-B underscore garden, G-A-R-D-E-N. Ray wants to remain anonymous.
That's not true.
But yeah, if you want to see a bunch of like weird Rick and Morty and Star Wars gifs, that's my Instagram. So.
All right, cool. So, you know, I want to thank you guys for coming on. You know, I really appreciate you taking out the time to do this, and thank you for everything you've done for our country.
No, likewise. No, thank you.
Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, guys. Peace.
Yeah, take care. Thank you.
Great conversation with Mike Baumgarten and Ray Mendoza. I can't wait to see this show. And, you know, from what I gather from talking to different veterans, guys who I've podcasted with and stuff like that, in some cases they've said, you know, this is the first time I've ever spoken about any of this stuff to anybody. And it has a catharsis kind of effect on them, which is like, you know, a positive effect on their mind, you know, for being able to talk about some of these things. So hopefully for some of the guys doing this show, it had a similar effect in being able to tell their stories and, you know, remember their fallen brothers and things like that. So now with that being said, I will close out this episode. You can check out the Warfighters on Instagram. Their profile is The Warfighters. Be sure to follow them. It's a cool profile. They update regularly. And let's help them grow their presence on social media. You can catch Chantel Taylor on Mission Critical on Instagram. Mike Baumgarten's Instagram account is bomb_garden. And my website is www.globalrecon.net. My Facebook is FB Recon. My Instagram, I have a couple accounts. My first account is IG Recon. The second account is Black Ops Matter. And I'm also on Mission_critical as well. I have a Twitter. The Twitter is IG Recon. I'm also on LinkedIn. Just search Global Recon. I encourage all of you guys to subscribe, download, like, and share these podcast episodes with your friends, with your family, and help us grow it and continue to stay at the top of the charts on iTunes and the national and government categories. So with that being said, see you guys next week with another episode. Peace.